Good morning.
Morning. It was nice of the rain to hold off for you all to come this morning. First service was coming in during the rain, but we're glad that you're here. If you don't know, my name is Howard Koepke, lead pastor here. Glad that you're here today, sporting my Captain America shirt. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but they're filming the movie down in Atlanta right now. So if any of you got a hookup to get me on as an extra, just let me know, okay? We can do that. Inside your bulletin are some notes to follow along. I definitely encourage you to take some notes today as we are wrapping up this Happy Teaching series. And the idea behind this series is that we have been looking at the Beatitudes, which is the very beginning of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, greatest sermon ever given, found in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. And here at the very beginning of the greatest sermon ever given, Jesus thought it was important enough to map out basically some secrets, some attitudes of how we can experience real happiness and joy and fulfillment in our lives. And that's what we've been looking at through this series. And if you've missed any of the series, get on our website and check it out, share it with your friends. But I think, you know, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think that the reason that Jesus started off this greatest sermon ever given in this way is because probably every human being throughout history has searched for happiness, but very few people actually find it. And today what we're going to talk about is having a pure heart and how important that is in this journey towards happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction. Now, Americans today are pretty much obsessed with purity. So you might be thinking, say what? Oh, yeah. Except they're obsessed with pure air, pure water, pure food, right? Not nearly as concerned about purity of the heart, and which is what we're going to be looking at today. And Jesus says that's very, very important. In fact, I want us to start off reading this morning, Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, off the big screen. And before we read it, turn to somebody next to you and tell them, read big. Tell them, read big, okay? All right, let's read this out loud together. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. There you go. Again, that word blessed or blessed is an old English word that simply means happy, but a very different happy than we probably tend to think about in our world today. And what I think Jesus is saying there is kind of the overriding idea of this message today, if you want to jot this down in your notes, is that happiness really is a heart condition. It comes from the inside out. That happiness is a heart condition that comes from the inside out. That it's not, happiness is not based on the stuff that we have. It's not based on the circumstances and what is going on around us. But rather, it starts inside of us and begins working its way out. And let me give you a couple quick definitions of what a pure heart means. First of all, it means unmixed motives. If you want to jot that down, unmixed motives. It also means integrity. But it also means being the same on the inside as you are on the outside. Being the same on the inside as you are on the outside. Now, unfortunately, these qualities tend to be very, very rare in our society today, in our culture today. And what Jesus is kind of saying here is that God is just as concerned about why you do something as he is with what you do. That your motivation, that your reason, that your heart behind doing things is just as important as the things that you do. And today what I want to share with you are basically three things that we're going to have to do if we're going to have this pure heart that Jesus talks about, that Jesus wants us to have. And the first thing is to remember that God sees everything. To remember that God sees everything. Now, I don't say that to freak you out like, ooh, you know. But simply more to understand, if you want to keep jotting in your notes, that nothing is hidden from God. That nothing is secret from God. And Matthew chapter 6 is where we're going to camp out this morning. And in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus lays out some things that are really, really good for us to do, but sometimes they can be done with the wrong heart and the wrong motivation. And in Matthew 6, we see the phrase a few times. It starts off here in verse 4, saying, "Then your Father who sees what is done in secret." Again, nothing is hidden, nothing is secret from God. And then in Hebrews 4:13, it says, "Nothing in all creation can hide from him. Everything is naked and exposed before his eyes. This is the God to whom we must explain all that we have done." Now, here's what that verse means to me. If God already knows, then I can quit faking it. I can quit putting on that facade. I don't have to invest time and energy and effort into, you know, being a phony, because God already knows. In fact, let's also read out loud this morning. First Chronicles chapter 28, verse 9. Let's read this together. The Lord searches every heart and understands every motive behind the thoughts. So the starting point, the baseline, if you will, to us beginning to have this pure heart that Jesus wants us to have is to just simply remember that God sees everything. The second thing we have to do, and this is huge, I believe, is review our motives. Review our motives. And if you want to just keep jotting, we need to do an honest evaluation of why we do what we do. We need to do an honest evaluation of why we do what we do. And I think this is very critical for us to do this rather regularly in the Christian life. Because it's real easy to get a degree or two off course, right? And if we don't figure that thing out for 3, 6 months, 12 months, we could be way off course. So we need to periodically do this honest evaluation of why I do what I do. And the Bible talks a lot about motives. And in Proverbs 16:2, it says, all a man's ways seem innocent to him, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Basically, our reward from God is not just based on what we do, but it is also based on why we do it. Which is why Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, verse 1, take care. Don't do your good deeds publicly to be admired, because then you will lose your reward from your Father in heaven. Now, is it possible to do the right things but do them for the wrong reasons? Oh, yeah. And in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus gives us three specific things that are really good things to do, but that sometimes can be done with the wrong heart and the wrong motivation. And the first one is giving. We can sometimes give with the wrong heart and motivation. It says in verse 2, when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. Jesus says, you know, when you give, don't do it to try to impress other people. Now, let me give you a little context here, a little history here, to understand how, you know, the purpose of Jesus saying this in this setting. Back in the Jewish synagogues of Jesus' time, they would have these bins, these the buckets, whatever it was, next to the entrances. And that way, when people came in, they could kind of discreetly, quietly give money to help the poor, to help the synagogue, the church, that kind of thing, right? And the purpose was to help them do it inconspicuously. But the Pharisees, they didn't like that. No, because they wanted to be seen, right? So here's what the Pharisees would do, and I'm going to have John Wilcox give me a hand with this morning. And in just a moment, John, I'm going to have you walk down front and drop some money in that bucket right there. You have your wallet with you, John? Okay, good, good. Because, hold on a second. Because, you know, I'm in the mood for sushi today, and, you know, there you go. Anyway, so here's what the Pharisees would do. So, John, you begin slowly making your way down the aisle. Church could be going on, worship could be going on, teaching could be going on, okay? It didn't matter. They would just get up right in the middle of the thing and start working their way. By the way, what are y'all looking at? We're not focusing on John, are we? Our focus isn't on John. We're worshiping God, right? But therein is the problem. And what they do is they'd come down and they'd give money. Yes. Yes, there you go. Yeah, I think they are. That's pretty sweet. Thanks, man. Yes.
Thank you, God, for blessing me.
And then they kind of parade their way back. Why? Because they wanted everybody to see how wonderful and spiritual they are, right? And Jesus says, hey, that's not why you give. That's not the heart and motivation behind why you give. Now, I believe we have some modern day examples of this as well. I was at a well-known church here in the Atlanta area a few years back. And on every piece of furniture in that church, it had somebody's name on it. Every chair had somebody's name on it. The organ, the instruments on the stage had plaques with people's names on it. Now, folks, a memorial to dead people is okay. But these folks were alive. And what that said to me was, you know, we gave our money and look how wonderful we are. Again, folks, that's not why we give. We give for God to see it. We give because he has given to us. That's why we give. And I just want to challenge y'all. I think knowing many of you, you know, the idea behind, you know, our heart and motive behind giving, you know, that's important. We need to evaluate that from time to time. But I think for some of us, we need to probably evaluate whether we give or not. I mean, the reality is that God says that I bless you with 100% of everything you have, everything you get. And I want you to give back 10% to help support my work. Because I've told you before, God's work costs money and God's work is funded by God's people. So I just want to challenge you in that regard as well. You know, as our church is kind of, you know, rebuilding and all these kinds of things, you know, we need our giving to increase just to be able to keep up with the ministries and mission work locally and globally that we're already doing, let alone anything additional God might ask us to do. And as we're getting ready to kick off summer, you know, when a lot of people are in and out of town, we definitely cannot afford to have a summer slump in our giving so that we don't have to cut back on any ministries and mission work and that kind of thing. So we actually have a few tools to help you in that regard. And I just want to challenge each of us to make sure that we're being consistent and faithful in our giving in support of God's work. And you can give on our website and set up recurring, that kind of thing. So whether you're here or not, you're still being faithful. We have a giving app, an Eagle Point app with a giving feature on there. You can do it through that. We have the kiosk out in the cafe because a lot of people aren't carrying their checkbooks with them nowadays, right? So let me just challenge us to make sure that we're giving consistently, faithfully, all that, but also make sure we're checking our motivation from time to time. Make sure we're doing it with the right heart and the right spirit. The second thing that Jesus says that is a really good thing to do, but that can sometimes be done with the wrong heart and motivation, is praying. You might think, is it actually possible to pray with the wrong heart and motivation? Well, Jesus says you can. He says here in Matthew 6, he says, when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites who love to pray standing in the synagogues or on the street corners to be seen by men, because that's what these Pharisees would do, right in the middle of worship. Teaching could be going on, singing going on, whatever the case might be, and they would just stand up and start praying, as weird as that might seem. Or they'd be out on the street, on a street corner, praying out loud so that, again, everybody would see how wonderful and spiritual they are. And Jesus says that's not what we're supposed to be doing. And again, I think we've got some modern-day examples of this as well. Have you ever heard somebody pray? And when they pray, they use kind of this flowery King James English kind of deal, right? And you sit there and go, what? Right? And they're going, oh, dear most gracious heavenly Father, we beseech you in the name of your Son Jesus that thou wouldst bestow upon us a great bountiful harvest of blessings. And you're going, what? Right? Now listen, if you talk like that normally every day, it makes sense to talk to God like that. Otherwise, you're not doing it for God. Or you hear people sometimes do the bragging prayer. God, I thank you that I got to do this to support your ministry, or I got to witness to 15 people this week. Folks, we need to remember our audience. You know, we're praying to God, we're talking to God, and everybody else is just eavesdropping, right? We got to make sure we check that motivation. Another thing Jesus says is really good to do, but we can do with the wrong motivations, is fasting. Fasting. In fact, he says here in verse 16, when you fast, wash your face, put oil on your head, something they did back in the day, not so much nowadays. It says, so that it won't be obvious to men that you are fasting. Now, underline when you fast. Little side note here. Notice Jesus doesn't say if you fast. He says when you fast. In other words, this is supposed to be a regular part of our Christian lives. And if you're not familiar with fasting, it's just a very serious form of prayer. It's where you give up food or some other activity so that you can devote more time and attention to prayer. And it's a really good thing to do, especially if you've got some big decisions to make. Now, the Pharisees did fast, but they did it to make sure everybody saw how, again, how wonderful and spiritual they are. Now, personally, I love when somebody gives a big gift of their time, their resources, their money, whatever the case might be, and they say, Howard, I'd really appreciate it if you didn't tell anybody that I did this. And when that happens, I'm like, yes, you know, because they get it. They got the right heart, the right attitude, the right motivation. Now, if you want to jot this down in your notes, the opposite of being pure in heart is being a hypocrite. The opposite of being pure in heart is being a hypocrite. John 12:43 says, they love praise from men more than praise from God. That's a scary verse. And I hope that's never true of any of us. And then in 1 Thessalonians 2:4 it says, we are not trying to please men, but God who tests our hearts. So the first thing we got to do is remember that God sees everything. The second thing is we got to review our motives, right? Make sure our heart's in the right place. But the third thing that's really important is we have to realign our priorities. We have to realign our priorities. Why? Because God wants first place in your life. Now, you do know that God was the originator of the top 10 list, right? Now, what was God's, you know, God, the Ten Commandments, right? Now, do you remember what the number one thing on God's top 10 list was? Exodus 20, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me, right? Now, why don't you jot down in the margin somewhere this definition of quote unquote a god? A god is anything that has first place in your life. A god is anything that has first place in your life. Can your career be your god? Oh, yeah. Can your kids or your family be your god? Absolutely. Can your boyfriend or girlfriend be your god? Yeah. And can material possessions and stuff be your god? Oh, yeah. Especially in our culture today, right? Now, the difficulty is, God says, I want first place in your life. In fact, I demand it. I'm not going to play second fiddle to anyone or anything. I want to be your number one priority. Now, a few of you might remember, I shared this story quite some time ago, but when I was a youth pastor back in South Florida, I was, you know, working and then volunteering my time as a youth pastor, and I was going into one of the local high schools to lead an after-school Bible study kind of a thing. And as I'm walking in, one of the girls from my youth group is coming towards me down the hallway just bawling in tears, right? So I stop her, and I give her a great big hug. I'm asking her what's going on. And she said, Howard, do you remember a few weeks back when you were talking about, you know, God being number one in our life and, you know, number one priority, and that, you know, anything that's first in our lives is really the God of our life? I'm like, yeah, I remember all that. He says, man, I've been doing a lot of praying and thinking about that. And she said, I've come to realize that my boyfriend is the God of my life, that he's the number one thing. And as tears are just flowing down her face, she says, and I realized that he had to go. And I just broke up with him. And I just gave her a great big hug and told her I was proud of her. Because you know what? It requires some pretty tough decisions in our lives to keep God in that number one place, that number one spot. But that's what he demands. That's what he wants. So how do you know if God really is your number one priority? Well, the first thing you have to do is look at my activities, right? We all got to look at our own activities. Because you can tell a lot about a person's priorities by where they spend their time and their money. I've told some of you before, you show me your checkbook, you show me your calendar, I'll show you what your priorities are every single time. And that's why Jesus says in Matthew 6:19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, you might want to underline, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, treasure doesn't have to be money. Treasure, again, could be anything that's kind of number one in your life. That's where your heart is. That is what has become the God of your life. And the reality is that the more we put other things in that first place category of our lives, the less they satisfy us. We talked about that 2 weeks ago when we talked about satisfaction and fulfillment and those kind of things. The more we put other things in that first place category of our lives, the less they satisfy us, and the more we're left with this desire of just wanting more and more and more, and we're never satisfied. And it's just kind of this vicious, unfulfilling cycle that we find ourselves in. So the first thing we have to do is look at our activities, where we're investing our time and our money and so on. The second thing, if you want to know if God really has first place in your life, is you need to look at your anxieties. You need to look at your anxieties. In other words, you can tell a lot about a person's priorities, but what they worry about, right? Now, Jesus says in Matthew 6:25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life. Now, let's just be honest. We all worry, okay? We all tend to worry, but here's the reality. When we worry, it is proof of a misplaced priority. Worry is really a control issue. And when I'm worrying, what I'm really saying is that I am in charge. Now, here's the problem. If I am in charge, I ought to be worried. Because there's a whole lot of things I can't do. There's a whole lot of things I can't fix. But when God is in charge, what in the world is there to worry about, right? And believe me, this is a constant, daily, several times a day struggle to keep putting God in charge of our lives. And if you want to jot this down in your margins somewhere, here's something I've said for years, which is that worry is the opposite of worship. That worry is the opposite of worship, because when I'm worrying, I'm focusing on me and my limitations and my circumstances and all those kinds of things. But when I worship, I'm focusing on God, with whom all things are possible, right? So you can tell a lot about a person's priorities by looking at their anxieties, what they worry about. The third thing is we have to take a look at our ambitions. Our ambitions. What are your goals and ambitions in your life? Jesus says in Matthew 6, 31 and through 33, "So do not worry, saying, 'What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?' For the pagans run after all these things. And your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." Why don't you underline, run after all these things? Run after all these things, because guess what? That's what ambition is. It's the stuff we're always chasing after. It's the stuff that we are always running after. Now, here's the problem. Too many Christians today have the same goals and ambitions as the world does, as non-Christians do. We've bought into the same world system. We've bought into the same values. We've bought into the same goals and all of that. Therefore, we want the same things that they want. And as a result, we have the same headaches and stress that they have. We have the same heartaches and problems that they have. So what are you after in life? What are your ambitions? Because those can very easily become the God of your life. So what does it really look like in our lives when we have that pure heart? What is it we should be striving for? What is that picture in our minds supposed to look like? Well, the first thing there in your notes is that I am conscious of God's presence. I am conscious of God's presence. Now, a pure in heart person is aware that God is with them all through life. And that person with that pure heart is so conscious of God's presence that they tend not to worry a whole lot. Again, we all worry. But they tend not to worry very much. And they really tend not to worry about what other people think, right? Because it's a matter of who we're trying to please. And many times, most of the time, our happiness, our personal happiness, boils down to who are we trying to please. So a pure in heart person is very conscious of God's presence. The other thing is they are content with God's praise. They are content with God's praise. Now, everybody lives for somebody's praise. And the reality is that when you live for the praise of people, you're going to be in some big trouble. Why? Because today's hero is always tomorrow's zero, right? That's just the nature of the beast. I mean, how many musicians and famous people and movie stars and stuff, oh, they're it for a period. And then a few years later, you're going, gee, wonder what happened to them, right? I mean, that's just the nature of this thing that we live in today. And the problem is, again, let's be honest, it's a kick to receive the praise of people, but the praise of people is only temporary, while the praise of God is eternal, and that is something worth going after. So a pure in heart person is conscious of God's presence. They are content with God's praise. And the third thing is that they are controlled by God's priorities. They are controlled by God's priorities. That pure in heart person lives by one standard, Jesus' standard. He is boss. He is El Jefe. He is in control. And again, that's what we need to be striving for. That's that picture we need to be trying to make our lives look like. Now, I'll just tell you also that when you start trying to have that pure heart, when you start trying to be honest and transparent, having those unmixed motives and walking with integrity and all those kinds of things, the results are going to be, first of all, happiness, if you want to jot that down. The result's going to be happiness. Jesus said, blessed or happy is the pure in heart. Why? Because they're no longer faking it. They're no longer stressing about the facade. They're not worried about being found out. So the first result is happiness. Another one is that you get to see God at work in your life. You get to see God at work in your life. Jesus said, you know, blessed or happy are the pure in heart, for they will see God. When you have a pure heart, you get to see God at work in your life. Now, how many of you wear glasses or contact lenses? Yeah? What happens when those lenses get dirty, smudged, all that kind of stuff? Gets a little hard to see, right? Gets a little hard to see clearly when your lenses are like that. Now, don't miss this. When you have a heart that is full of pain and disappointment and heartbreak, when you have a heart that is stained up by sin or some other circumstance, it can be really hard to see God at work around you. It can get really hard to see that clearly. But when you have a clean, pure heart, you can see God at work even in the most difficult of circumstances. So where do you get this pure heart? One place. By asking God for it. That's it. By asking God for it. Let me give you an example of this. In just a moment, we're going to read this one last verse together. But let me just set it up for you. David, King David, wrote this verse as his personal prayer. And he wrote this verse after committing adultery, after sending the woman's husbands to the front lines of battle where he would be killed. So essentially, he wrote this verse after committing adultery and murder, after the most horrible, awful time of his entire life. And with that context in mind, let's read this verse out loud together. Create in me a new clean heart, O God, filled with clean thoughts and right desires. I think that would be a great prayer to pray every day. Now, that's not the end of the story. The end of the story is that God does give David a clean, pure heart. And then David works very, very hard to keep his heart clean and pure, to the point that years later, here is God's description of David. He said, David is a man after my own heart. David is a man, David, murderer, adulterer, years later. David is a man after my own heart. Church, be clean-hearted. Be pure-hearted. And you will get to see God at work in your life. Let's pray. God, we thank you for today. I know I personally thank you as I studied this week for this message of just the great reminder it was for me. And I pray that you'll use it as a reminder for many of us that this struggle for a clean, pure heart is truly a daily, sometimes several times a day struggle. This struggle to keep you in that first place category of our lives, number one in our lives, is a daily, many times, several times a day struggle, especially in this world that we live in today that's pulling us every direction except towards you, where our values and our focus and everything can so easily get off track and be influenced in negative ways. So, Father, I pray that you would just give each of us that clean, pure heart, that you would help each of us to work hard to keep it that way, that you would help us as a church family to encourage each other and hold each other accountable and ask the tough questions, helping us together keep that clean, pure heart. Because, God, we want to see you at work. We want to see you at work in our lives, in our families, in our church, in our community, in our world. And God, not only do we want to see it, but we want to be a part of it. We want you to use us to help bring that about. So help us, God, to be that clean, pure heart and vessel that you can use and you can bless. God, help us to keep remembering that this life is not about us. It's about you. It's about your cause. It's about those who don't know you yet. And it's about us doing whatever it takes to make sure that those people find you and spend eternity in heaven with you. God, I just thank you that so many in this church family get that and have that heartbeat. And I pray that you just continue to grow that in each and every one of us. And I pray this in the name of your son, Christ. Amen. Cool. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for how you've listened today. Real quick, I know Tim Roman already let you know that for the 10 weeks of summer, we're going to do one service at 10 a.m. That was kind of the overwhelming consensus from so many of you who gave us feedback. And we're really excited about this on a few different fronts. One is many of you have worked your tails off volunteering from last August till now. And we just are looking forward to being able to give you a little bit of a break and just kind of take it easier on making a, being able to rotate volunteers in and those kind of things. So we're looking forward to you being able to recharge and refresh a little bit before we hit back at it in 10 weeks. The other thing is, many of you know that we have been very intentional this year about trying to at least provide opportunities. We can't make you do anything, but at least providing opportunities for you to build relationships and fellowship and get to know people, doing things like our cookouts and bonfires and other activities of that nature. And we think that doing this is going to enable us another great opportunity for relationship building. In that, as I think Tim mentioned, every couple weeks we're going to do a cookout or something of that nature right after our 10 a.m. service. So we would encourage you on those days to stick around and be a part of that and meet some people that you don't know and those kind of things. And we're also just kind of looking forward to help us communicate this with other people. There's going to be some Sundays that it's going to feel rather crowded in here, okay? But you know what? Crowded is a good thing, okay? And we're going to enjoy that time. It's only for a 10-week period, but we're looking forward to that kind of just that energy of having the whole family together. The reality of doing two services, there's a lot of people in our first service that you may have never even seen before, let alone know, and vice versa. So that, we think there's going to be a lot of positives that come out of this 10-week stretch. So please support that, embrace that, but also help us communicate that. Because, you know, this is springtime, a lot of festivals, kids' sports, all that. There's probably members of our church family, attendees that have no clue that we're doing this yet. So we're going to ask you to help us spread the word, make the phone calls, send the email, share stuff on social media, and make sure people don't get surprised over the next week or two showing up expecting our old format, okay? So again, thanks for being here today. Love you all. And let's go out worshiping one last song. Oh, one last thing. I'm sorry, Joe. As soon as this is over, we could really use some help. We got membership class. We got a bunch of people going to be sticking around for membership class. So if you guys can help stack and move chairs and help us set up a few tables, love you. Okay, go.